You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. Now in our 31st year of continuous political talk, it is a Tuesday, July the 16th. It gives me no pleasure to say this, but I am ashamed of the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a racist. I know about being a racist. I grew up in a racist household. My family's friends were racist. The students I went to school with were racist. The radio station where I started were racist owners. Races all around me in a small Kansas town. I looked upon a person as a person who was just a friend, not a person of color. But people in my hometown looked at a person who was not white and they said he was subhuman, unworthy of social contact, unworthy of God's grace. Worthy, of course, of hitting a basket from a basketball thrown into a hoop or running away from somebody toward a goal line. If you had the ball and you were headed for a touchdown, you were worthy then, but that was about it. And now what do we do? And where do we find ourselves in America? We are a nation with a clock turned backwards. Time has stood still. We're not moving forward. We are a racist society with a racist president. I will talk with Jimmy Zoomer today, our Washington, D.C. correspondent. I will talk with Andy Barr, Democratic consultant, Clarence Boykin, civil rights leader, and Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, Dr. Nolan Caprera, who's an expert on racism, teaches at the University of Arizona, and we'll talk with Dr. Stephen Zunis about what is happening with Turkey buying a defense system from Russia that could blow up the whole NAFTA situation, or excuse me, the whole situation with the Middle East in turmoil. Well, let's go to Jimmy Zoom in Washington, D.C. Jimmy, welcome to the show, and what happened in Washington today?
Hi, John. Well, it's been actually a pretty wild day in Washington. You know, the House of Representatives is considering a motion to censure Donald Trump, and it's been a wild day on the floor of the House of Representatives. You know, I never thought I would hear Nancy Pelosi call our president a racist. I just never imagined that would be part of what happened in my lifetime. But a few days ago, she did. She called out the president. She called him a racist, and she said it's time for us to all realize. And then today on the House floor, she condemned his comments as racist and got a lot of pushback from Republicans. There was a motion to take down her words that ultimately failed, and then there was a motion to restore her right to speak, because when your words violate the rules of decorum in the House, you're not allowed to speak for the rest of the day. I didn't hear what happened with that, but I assume that it passed, and now they'll move right on to the motion to censure the president for his racist, obviously racist comments. And then in another bit of news, Kellyanne Conway, talking to a reporter, asked him to name his ethnicity before she would answer his question.
I beg your pardon?
Yes, that's what happens. That's the reporter she asked him, what is your ethnicity? And he said, that has nothing to do with my question. And she said, well, I'm not answering your question until you tell me. So it seems like the party has gone full on racist. Now, today we've seen a couple of dozen Republicans not worthy of the presidency, but the response from the Republicans has been pretty soft. Now the Republicans in the House are whipping the Republican members in the House to vote against the resolution condemning Trump's comments. So they will be basically voting against condemning racist comments. I don't think that's a good look for them. I'm not sure there's anyone who's concerned about racism that's still in the Republican Party. You know, the Republican Party today is made up of a lot of racists and a lot of people who are willing to overlook racism in the other voters and in the Republican politicians. So it's a settled issue in the Republican Party. Racism is A-OK, or at least something to be overlooked. But Democrats are livid about this, and Trump is basically the Democratic Party at a time when they were split.
Well, it seems to me that Trump is trying to make desperate, suffering people the villains of our national story. I mean, you just hear this over and over again. He compares refugees fleeing repression and violence to being snakes. He smears them as rapists and invaders. He's warped the moral vision and mercy in the form of a national weakness, and kindness and respect as crimes against the state, Michael Gerson writing. from the Washington Post, and that's exactly what he's done. I never thought I would live to see the day when this would be so blatant. I mean, it's always been subtle, and it's always been racist all around me. I grew up with them. I went to school with them. I've worked with people who are racist, but I've never seen this so blatant from an administration of my government and from a president of the United States. Never have I ever expected to see this. I don't know when it's happened before. It had to be a long time ago. But
Well, the other thing, this all started out, I think, as Trump opportunistically, as he does and as bullies do, trying to kick some other folks when they were down. And these four representatives that he is told to go back to their country, which, you know, for three of them, it's the United States, and for the other one is a naturalized citizen. So all four of them go back to their own country is the United States. But he just doesn't see brown people as legitimate citizens. That's clear. This whole thing, though, started out because they were under fire by Democrats. And I think he just wanted to kick them when they were down. I mean, that's kind of what bullies and predators do, and that's what Trump has done over and over. But he has really doubled down on it, and with Kellyanne Conway coming out with her racist comment, it seems like this is the direction that the president's campaign is going in. This looks like to me an inflection point. You know, we remember certain inflection points when the administration kidnapped children, when we saw the conditions in the camps, when he called the Mexican judge illegitimate. There are inflection points like this that I think will be very powerful for Dem office. He's basically giving them the video and audio to prove that he's not worthy of the office. So I think in terms of seeing the next president not be Donald Trump, this is it's a big mistake on his part and a gift to politics. But wrapped up in that is a more disgusting and immoral aspect that we just can't overlook.
Well, he's taken all his racist chips. He's pushed them to the middle of the table. This is what he's banking his reelection campaign on. It couldn't be anything else. It might be the economy. It might be this and that. But he believes there are enough of the people like-minded as he is about race that will elect him to another term. Is that possible in this country?
Well, he doesn't even realize that not all of the people who are currently supporting him are racist. He just assumes that anybody who's on his team is racist and that it's perfectly acceptable for him to be a racist. But I think, you know, we saw when he kidnapped the children, he lost a lot of the suburban vote, and this will drive even more. We're seeing in the polling that any of the top four candidates can beat him, and I expect those leads to expand after this. So it's dumb to be a racist. It's dumb to make racist statements, and it's dumb to try and win your reelection on white supremacy. It's just not going to work.
Well, you know, the Gershon column talked about because cruelty without opposition gains momentum, which I truly believe it does, because a refugee child is more important than a whole continent. I don't know how this is going to play out. I do know how it plays out among people that I talk with, and I talk to a great many progressives in the Democratic Party on a very, very regular basis, 5-10 calls every morning to start the day, and then people call me. But the simple truth, I think, is there may be enough racists out there to elect him to another term, which just scares the living hell out of me. It really does. I never ever saw this in America, ever.
Well, I don't believe that, but I do believe there's enough people who will overlook race that he could string together something under 50%.
Wow.
I don't think this is a winning strategy. I really don't. I think maybe a third of the people in the country are abject racists. I think that equates to about 60% of the Republican Party, and there are 40% who are Republicans for other reasons. And I don't think this will sit well with them. I don't think it looks like a qualification to be an abject racist. They may overlook it, but I think even fewer and fewer of them will be willing to overlook this. I think he's made a real strategic blunder.
So how could he hold any significant portion of the Hispanic vote in America in 2020? How could he even ask for it? I mean, how could he do that now?
Well, that's an interesting question. Why are 50% of Border Patrol officers Latino? You know? Oh. You know, these questions are hard to answer.
Yes, they are.
I do know that once you get in a club or take a job or form a family, it's not you that changes those things. Those things change you. So once you affiliate yourself with racists, and it's the racists that will change you, not you won't change the race. So that's true. And, you know, jobs change people. We see that in the police department. We see that in every kind of job. The institutions change the person. In this case, the president of the United States is changing racists to be more out and open, but I don't think he's turning anybody.
Well, you've got immigration officials apparently fired, not being fired for lack of skill or accomplishment, but for lacking sufficient cruelty. I mean, just look at what's happened here.
That's the other aspect of Trump. Number one, he doesn't think brown people are legitimate citizens. And as a racist, he probably doesn't even think they're people. So this cruelty that he enjoys is another aspect of his immoral character. Let me say it that way.
So did you expect the attack on the four congresswomen to bring the Democrats together? It has, but I didn't expect it. Did you?
Well, I expected the response would be softer than it is. I didn't expect a censure motion in Congress. I think that I expected Democrats to just throw up their hands and say, oh, well, there he goes again. But, yeah, this has totally united the party. And this comes in the context of something else that happened, Netroots Nation Conference, where everybody had their own ideas about who should be the next president, but there was remarkable unity in one thing. Whoever is the nominee will get their vote. And these are the far most liberal or most progressive members of the Democratic Party that attend the Netroots Nation Conference. And they all said they don't want it to be Biden, but even if it's Biden, no matter who it is, no matter who gets the nomination, they're all going to support it. So that kind of unity transcends even elected officials, and it goes to the party as a whole. I think you're going to see remarkable unity and remarkable turnout from Democrats this time.
Well, here's what shocks me. The president has made it clear that he has no qualms about exploiting racial divisions in America, and he says, it doesn't concern me because many people agree with me. A lot of people love it, by the way.
Well, CNN did a piece that everybody should read today. Go to CNN and search on a lot of people agree with me, and it'll bring up a piece where they basically determined that, yes, white supremacists think his tweets are great.
So
the lot of people, I guess, is white supremacists and those goons he had for the social media conference.
Well, I don't see how he can be effective in any way, shape, or form in the middle of this firestorm. I really don't. He's going to get burned by this, but a lot of other people are going to get burned as well. I mean, we have some major problems in this world. What's happening with Turkey buying the Russian missile defense system, what's going to happen with Iran and the pressure that has been building against that country, what's going to happen as apparently North Korea just runs all over Trump. I think there's so many issues that are about life and death and about survival of the planet that I don't know how this is going to play out. I really don't, but he cannot be an effective president with only the support he has now. He can't be. There's too much opposition.
He hasn't been an effective president since he arrived. He's done a lot of terrible things. He hasn't been effective at governance. And really, if he was a smarter guy, he could have done a lot more harm to the country that he wanted to do. But because he's not that bright, he's really not able to be successful even in this business. You know, he's basically bankrupted the president morally. And effectively.
Well, you carry around that box, though, that can blow up the world, and you got to ask yourself, wait a minute, he's got the box, take it away from him, for God's sake.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the people who are around him when he tries to push the button. Those are the people that will save the world.
Well, Jimmy Zuma, thanks for being with us. Thanks for observing from the nation's capital the nightmare that is the Trump presidency. I appreciate you being on the show so very, very much. We'll talk again very, very soon. Thank you.
Yeah, before I go, John, the podcast debuted today.
Oh, that's right.
With
Victoria Steele.
With Zuma and Steele, with Victoria Steele and myself. And it's out on Spotify, and it's working its way through the other podcast apps, so people should give a listen.
I will. As soon as I can get it, I will listen to it. Thank you so much. Two
Our
great talents.
Is about Jeffrey Epstein and Alex Acosta. So
wow.
Make sure. Thanks, John. Appreciate
it. Jimmy Zuma in Washington, D.C. Andy Barr is with us. He's a Democratic consultant. We'll go to him next about what has happened in Washington, the racist charges of the President of the United States, and so much more happening on this Tuesday, July the 16th. Andy Barr, Democratic consultant, one of the most respected in all of America. My guest after these messages. The Congress of the United States moves to censure the President of the United States for his racist comments. It's not total censure, but close enough. By the way, Michael Gerson, who is a Washington Post columnist, talks about his approach, and he's talking about Donald Trump's approach, to nationalism involves slander against the voiceless It demands further oppression of the oppressed. Trump wants to change not just the policy of our government, but the character of our country into something hard and dark and dishonorable and pitiless. And that is about the truth of it. Let's talk with Andy Barr, who is a Democratic consultant out of Phoenix, one of the brightest in the country, one of the most respected in all of the United States. Andy, I never thought it would go this far. I never thought I would say I am so ashamed of the President of the United States that it makes me sick to think about him. Just sick to think about him and what kind of racist he is. And I'll explain a little more of that in a moment, but you tell me what you think.
I guess I just wasn't that surprised because he is, maybe this is the most explicit he has been, but he has sent so many signals on this before in terms of, I mean, this is sort of what, like, Make America Great's all about, right? Like, it's about taking us back to a time where, you know, men are the only people who are working, white people who are the only people who are succeeding in society, and we're, like, unchallenged on the world stage and don't have to have any allies or friends, right? Like, it's, like, that was kind of the whole thing. That was the dog whistle, and I was just saying it out loud.
Yeah, but he swallowed the whistle. You know, there's no.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, come on.
No, I mean, you're right. I think the most discouraging thing, frankly, is like if this had happened 2 years ago, you'd have a bunch of Republicans trying to distance themselves and claiming that's not what the party stands for and all this other stuff, and we would have sort of known it was BS at the time. But now they're just not even trying. They've just given up. Like, they just know that that's what their party's about now.
But then, good Lord, how do you live with yourself there? I mean, seriously. I mean, is that what you want to be?
like Kevin McCarthy today is, you know, running the House Republican Conference in Congress. He's complaining that now Nancy Pelosi used the word racist on the House floor. Like, that's what his big complaint is today. And he's trying to get to, like, prevent her from speaking for the rest of the day. It's just like they're ignoring that they have this guy leading their party, and they're just trying to pretend like none of this is happening.
You know, I met Kevin McCarthy here in Tucson at a fundraiser for somebody else, and he was from California, came over and visited. So I'm sitting there talking with him about this and that and about what he wants and what he's going to do this couple of years ago. And I realized at the end of the conversation is Kevin McCarthy is dumber than nine chickens. No, seriously, he is not a bright guy. And, you know, he wants to be speaker. Well, God bless you. But he is not smart. And, you know, that's just really too damn bad. Let me tell you something else, too. You know, my son-in-law's black. My granddaughter is black and white and whatever. She's the most beautiful. She goes to school at Colorado State College in Colorado Springs. She's an honor student. She's the most beautiful child that ever walked the face of the earth. Her smile lights up every room she walks in. She has a smile that would just melt your heart. And she is the most wonderful person I would ever think of. But, I mean, what Donald Trump is saying about black people and about people of color is something against her as well. And I won't take it. I mean, if her family walked into a restaurant and somebody went blank lover, I would stand up and I would find whoever was that damn SOB, and I would beat the crap out of him. I can't do that with a president of the United States, but it's still an insult that must be answered to. It must be.
Yeah. Look, I think the thing you touch on here is it is about people of color. It's not about, you know, like the RNC has been, like, trying to claim it's about Ilhan Omar, and it's about, like, where she's from. She was born in Somalia. But, like, three of the four women he singled out are from the United States. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who he likes to go after, is not only from the United States, but her parents are Puerto Rican. She's of Puerto Rican descent. So she is American, like, all, like, in any possible context, going back any generation you want. So this is, like, it couldn't be any more clear that this is just about race. It's not about immigration. It's not about anything else you want to frame it as. It's just his view of people of color, and specifically young women of color.
But when do we stop saying, well, it's just Donald Trump being crazy? You know, when do we stop that? I mean, how far can we go with that before it becomes so baked in that we just accept it as okay for now? I mean, literally, how long do we take this and make it a part of who we are? Because he is who we are, whether we like it or not.
Yeah, I think that's the scary thing is to really reject this, we're going to need Republicans to stand up and do it. And there's just been no indication they will. Like, I mean, Democrats could impeach him, but we can't remove him. So I don't know what else our party is expected to do on this front. I know there are a lot of calls for them, and I get that, but just structurally and constitutionally, there's not much more that we can do than just be like vociferous opponents of everything that he tries to do. And I think, like, Nancy Pelosi knows is doing a good job of that. But it's going to take Republican senators, Republican governors, people actually having a conscience, and we're not seeing it.
Well, they're afraid of Donald Trump. They're afraid that if somebody comes out against him for what he has said and the way he has handled this matter, that he will then attack them and render them, I guess, unable to be reelected again. But you've seen these districts. You've worked all over this country. You understand these particular Republican enclaves. Why are these people so afraid of Donald Trump after years of service to their Republican constituents? And you would think if they saw something so wrong, that they would say something to try to right that wrong, but they don't. What is that? Yeah. What the hell is that?
I think the problem here is 40% of the country does not see a wrong.
Really? Well, that's just scary as hell.
it is, but look, his numbers have remained solid throughout. He has, there is just a high ceiling of people in this country who will support him no matter what. And I got to believe that if you had a problem with the President of the United States voicing racist views, you would this would be enough for you, right? But we're getting pretty clear indication that a whole bunch of people in America just think this way. And people had always thought this, but it's being proved now.
Yes, but when is push going to come to shove, and these people that cheer the African American who has the football headed for an end zone and that's going to win the game for their team, cheering as loud as they can, or hitting a three-pointer with just 2 seconds to play? When does that all turn around? Or are these people just gladiators for us? They're just part of what's in the Coliseum today.
I don't know. There's definitely some disconnect, right? But I think it is undeniable that there is, not just the sort of structural and systematic racism that we see throughout this country, where certain communities get denied resources or don't get opportunities others do. I think we're seeing that there is a huge swath of this country that just devalues people of color and just fundamentally doesn't think they should be in positions of power, doesn't earn a certain amount, or have the ability to have a strong public voice.
Yeah, but good God, we just had a president of the United States that was African American for 8 years, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Really?
Clearly made a lot of people angry. Just the fact.
I agree, and this is backlash. Trump's backlash to Obama. Really? God. Well, I don't know. I thought I understood this country. I've been doing this a long time. I've been in politics a long, long time. And you do this over and over again, day after day, hour after hour. You think you know a little bit about it, and I don't know a damn thing about it. I can't understand people that think like this. I just can't. I cannot imagine people thinking like this. And meaning for Trump to say to go back to your hellhole that you came from, and not understanding the hellhole is here.
Yeah.
It's us. You excuse that over and over again, making excuses for him, and then you say, well, that's the kind of president you want, that's the kind of president you've got, and where are you going with that? Good Lord, isn't it time that we're proud of the president of the United States again? Because you can't keep be proud of this guy. I guess some are. I don't know, but he is reelectable, isn't he?
I think, unfortunately, that's the answer, yeah.
Well, I don't want to hear that from you. I don't care what you say. You can say it as nicely as you want. I don't want to hear it.
I think if there are enough people who just get disgusted by this and reject it, and frankly, it's going to come down to, Republican voters in the state of Arizona and other places, there's definitely a... he's in much tougher space than, Barack Obama was trying to get reelected or George W. Bush was trying to get reelected. But... the states that are not rejecting this stuff, we're talking about Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan. Those are states that we sort of need to win back to change the math. And unless we kind of alter the map, he has some structural advantages in terms of how the Electoral College works.
By the way, Joe's a caller to our show. Joe, welcome to our show. You're with Andy Barr, who's a Democratic consultant. Go ahead, Joe.
Andy Barr, you are the rock star. Appreciate you being here, John. I love the show. So, man, I'll tell you what. Trump is only electable because the current Democratic centrism just brings nothing to the table. I think that they actually accentuate why people... the Republicans are always known as, we hate big government, we hate government, we hate this. We don't like anything about it. But Democrats are the closer link to it. But then when you bring a Democratic hollow, vacuous, empty corporate centrist, and they suck, and they don't bring anything back home, they don't do good works of government and what it could do, It just literally turns people either away from politics or it sends them to government-hating Trump weirdoism.
Well, Joe, you would call Pelosi today a centrist, I suppose, and then are you angry with her
totally
that she fought?
I would call her a centrist.
Well, look what she did today. She fought Trump tooth and nail all the way.
Look at what she started. John, look at what she started. Her H.R. 1 was the biggest rollout of a flop when she chose, instead of doing campaign finance reform, she savaged Ilhan Omar and was wasting time because everybody knows AIPAC is scandalous. Our whole political system is totally sold out. And that, you know, to say that it isn't, it's just part of the problem, you know?
Well,
and that's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say,
you're there. Yeah, I'm just like, this is why we waste time. And we're in such a futile fight that we make Trump possible. And we don't even have a platform that just says, you know what, poor people, brown people, black people, we got your back. We're gonna write it down on a platform and we're going to show you through policy. Everything is just about, like, when we couldn't, I remember going to, hanging out on Oracle and Orange Grove at more than one protest to protest in 2016, children in cages. Does anything sound familiar? Was anything done? No. And that's, I'm telling you, man, there is just something really weird at the top. And I think it's organized rot that projects rot that makes Republicanism and the corporate possibilities of that a real thing.
Well, now,
Andy Barr, what say you?
Well, Joe, now you're cheering me up, you know, thanks for that. You know, I was feeling pretty damn bad till you got on the air, and now, hell, I'm almost elated. You know, I mean, good Lord. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Well, you know, I don't know how far this is going to go, but it doesn't seem like there's a boundary with Trump. There's no boundary he can cross. There's no line he can crawl over that's going to make a difference. Is there, Andy Barr?
It doesn't seem like it. No. I mean, I feel like we've had this moment with some sort of different outrage, like, I don't know, 250 times since he's been elected, you know, and 100 times during the campaign. And each time for any other politician, it would have ended their career. And for some reason, his folks just won't back down and supporting him. And I think it's like a really sort of sad statement about where we're at in this country and the people supporting him. But I mean, you know, we live in a democratic system, and unfortunately, a huge bunch of people are sort of brainwashed and supporting this guy. And until we break that or get someone else into office, I really don't know what the alternative is right now.
Well, thank you for making me cheery again. You know, Lord, you know, between you and Joe, I'm depressed beyond words. I'm going to talk with Clarence Boykin. He's a civil rights leader in Tucson, and see how far he thinks we've come. Andy Barr, thanks for being with us on our show. And we appreciate your appearance very, very much. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Andy Barr is a Democratic consultant. He followed Jimmy Zuma in Washington, D.C. Clarence Boykin is a civil rights activist and one of the leaders of our community, one of the people that I respect most about Tucson leadership. He's my guest after these messages. Well, again, repeating the words of Michael Gerson in the Washington Post, he's talking about Donald Trump, talking about his approach to nationalism involving slander against the voiceless, demanding further oppression of the oppressed, and Trump wants to change not just the policy of our government, but the character of our country into something hard and dark and dishonorable and pitiless. Let's talk with Clarence Boykin, civil rights leader. He's fought all his life for equality, and he joins us now at a time when it would seem we're back in a race war, at least verbally in America, and it's not very pretty. It's very disgusting. What do you think, Clarence?
Well, you know, John, it's sad because we at a point, and we have had these discussions 40 years, 50 years ago, and we thought we had bridged this mechanism and on to something new and different, and it just keeps repeating itself. And I think the part of the problem gets to be is that I heard or read a statement where the president says that he's not a racist. He doesn't have a racist bone in his body or whatever. And that's the sad part, you know, because I think he believes that. And I think he believes that all the things that he has done that's been against various groups that are other than those who are white, doesn't see the harm and the danger and the damage there. He doesn't see where what he's saying is a racist type of situation. And so he believes it. He keeps saying it. His whole history has been back in the New York when he didn't want to rent to African-Americans way back. All his actions have been in that direction, and he thinks it's okay. And the problem is he got a whole bunch of people that's marching in tune behind him who's saying, defending it, saying it's okay. That is the problem. It's like what the king, with the king in his new clothes.
With no clothes, yeah.
No clothes. Yeah.
Well, you know, he talks about these four that he's attacking in the Congress, saying they hate our country. They hate it, I think, with a passion. I mean, who is he to say about hating this country? And the attacks have really gone far beyond anything I've ever witnessed, literally as an observer of politics and a president of the United States and what he says and what he does. I've never seen it go this far. I mean, I never thought I would see the day when I would call the president of the United States just a hardcore racist. I mean, and that is looking upon people of different color in a derogatory way, and that they are less human than those that are white. And that is being preached from the White House of the United States of America. In the name of God, where have we gone and where are we going is what I would like to know.
Well, and you know, the sad part about that, he's got a bunch of people who are defending it.
Oh, my God. I know.
People who are in power who are defending him that lack the guts to stand up and say, you know, Mr. President, look here. You know, I can support you on these issues here, but I can't go there. We can't accept that because it's dividing our country. When he has continually a group of political partners who will stand up and justify or try and justify his comments and the things that he's saying, and they don't see where there's any harm. Now, he's talking about one of the congresswomen who has talked about Israel and those things, but never have we heard her say anything about the people. She does speak about the policy, and there's a big difference there.
Well, yeah, and of course, if she's opposed to the Israeli policies, of which I'm opposed to, that would make her anti-Semitic and me anti-Semitic, which would surprise my Jewish wife and her family tremendously if they found that out. You know, and it just gets to a particular point where, you know, the name-calling is just insane. It just really is insane. And the idea that a president of the United States who was sworn to represent us all, to protect us all under the Constitution of the United States, would go so far as to divide us over race and hate. And that's what it's all about. And you know, Michael Gershon's headline, there'll be no vacation from Trump's cruelty or hatred. And you know what? There isn't going to be a vacation, Clarence Boykin, from Trump's cruelty or hatred. No vacation.
No, it's not. It's going to continue. But I can tell you this, the part that bothers me more than anything else is the fallout and the after effects. It's not what he's doing right now. We'll be 10 years trying. This is really the Humpty Dumpty theory here, trying to put poor Humpty Dumpty back together again. 10, 15 years from now, we will still begin to or still feel the effects of the things that are happening right now. You know, that's the sad part about it. You know, we got generations of young people that's coming along that, John, you and I won't be around to see. But the effects of what's happening right now, the rhetoric that's going on right now, our access to that, and the lack of opposition to just human decency puts us in a situation where it will have ill effects days and days to come.
Well, you know
that's the part.
I agree with you, and we're going to all have to live with this. I don't see how we get out of where we are right now unless we defeat Trump in 2020. That's the only way we're going to turn back the clock on what is really a march toward a division in this country that may not be able to be healed. Once you preach hate so much, those 10,000 repetitions make a truth to people. And that's where we're headed.
And not only that, but let's say he loses the election and there's a new president that's there. Where does the energy go? You know, where's the energy going to be? Is it going to be trying to put poor Humpty Dumpty back together again? Or can we move forward? Well, no, we can't move forward because we got too many baggage of things that are being destroyed, lack of trust, areas in which we have for a very long time believed and felt that we have overcome, that we've gotten beyond those type of things. It was a beautiful situation that so many women were able to be elected and to go into office. That was a milestone. So now we're going to divide that about who they are and what they are and where they stand from, and they got to go back to where they came from. Well, guess what? If we all went back to where we came from, ain't nobody here.
Nobody's here. That's right.
No,
there's nobody here. I just, the things that you've done all your life and little things that I've done, I talk about my granddaughter being half black, and I talk about her racially mixed family, which we all are, and we love each other, and we I just care so much about this granddaughter who's the most beautiful child on the face of this earth, and I worry about her. Why? Because I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to be here to cover her back. I'm not going to be here to stand up to somebody that says something about her and her father as they walk into a restaurant, or her and her mother when their father walk into a restaurant. I'm not going to be here for that. But I hope somebody else is. I hope somebody else is going to be there. And if they're not, then who's going to protect her? And she's going to be well able to protect herself, but that's not going to be enough. We've got to change the hearts and minds of the people of the United States. If this large number is racist, what does that make the rest of us? You know, I mean, honest to God.
You know, and it's a continuum that continues. We should be facing the issues of education and making sure that we provide education. Those are the subjects we need to be talking about. We're busy with this immigration as to who can come in the country and who can't come in the country, and let's build this and let's build that. All these things are divisive and keep us from being this great country that we believe that we are. That what are we celebrating, the 50th anniversary of being able to put a man on the moon? And the statement, you know, one small step for mankind, one giant step for mankind. All of those were things that bound us together and made us proud. What we're doing now are things that are divisive, that create hatred, moral bigotry, and we're giving a voice to those voices of hate. We said we were trying to establish where we're giving a voice to the voiceless, those people who couldn't, for one reason or the other, couldn't stand up and say what they want to say. We make voting difficult for people to vote. Come on, the one right you should have without any opposition is able to go and cast a ballot for a person that you want. States after state, we're changing all of that. Come on. What is it that we want to have?
You know, let me ask you, we're literally about 3 years away from a black president for 8 years. Barack Obama is seen in all the polling as one of the more popular presidents ever in history of those that are still alive.
You know,
there's no question about how beloved he was. But how did we get from a black president to a racist white pig? Did I say
that? You know.
Yeah, I think I did. No, that's all right.
Yeah. We've gotten to a place that the number one agenda of the president was to totally demolish everything that President Obama attempted to do. He spent the first part of his presidency trying to prove that he wasn't eligible to be president, you know, that he wasn't a citizen. I mean, and he pushed that agenda for as far as he could. And, of course, as soon as he got in office, he began to dismantle programs that President Obama, it didn't matter about who they hurt or who they helped, because President Obama did them, we need to get rid of them. It reminds me back of a governor that we had here some years ago by the name of Evan Meekum. When he won the office of governor, and the first thing he signed was the elimination of the Martin Luther King holiday, which Governor Babbitt had done before him. That was the first thing. That was the first thing that he did to get rid of that. You know, it turned our state into a turmoil. We went through a lot, but we overcame that. And we were able to do that because good people and people of goodwill came together and said, this isn't our state. We want to do different. We can do different. We will do. Now, here we are, 20-plus years later, down 30-plus years later, down the line, and we got a whole country that we need to say, this is not who we are as a country. This is, we're not going to be defined by what has happened. We're going to go to work, and we're going to do that. But people who are leaders in the civil rights issue, come on, we had this lady in New Orleans here a few days ago, civil rights activist, did a lot for the community, and getting murdered. What are we doing? Where are we going?
Well, where we're going is a very serious question that we have to ask ourselves. And it just seems to me that, you know, we've got to have this discussion. We have to be able to say, that's enough, Mr. President. That you've gone too far and you can't go any further. And we as a Congress, which is what Pelosi's going to do before the end of the day, is to simply call the president on his rhetoric and ask him to stop it. I don't know if that's going to make any difference whatsoever, but somebody has to say no. If we all just go along with this, which apparently all Republicans, or at least most Republicans, are doing, we're all going to be complicit in this effort. It might as well be we saying this, not just him saying it. But if we are quiet and silent and mute throughout this whole discussion, then we are complicit in the absolute, total, disgusting experience and exercise that we call racism in America. And that's what we are.
You know, one of the things that got Richard Nixon to walk away was when his party and the members of his party stood up and said, you are destroying the country and you're destroying our party. We all will be going down in flames. We got to make a change. Because that all that backdoor support and all those other things he was getting was no longer going to happen. And that's when he decided, you know, it's time to go. And the deal is, I can get out of here and not have to worry about going to jail later on.
Well,
and I think those people around the president right now who stands up and support him and say, you know, what a great person he is on an ongoing basis, and he didn't really mean that, he's not that person, we need them to stand up and say enough's enough.
Well, the president made it clear that he has no qualms about exploiting racial divisions. Once again, he says it doesn't concern me because many people agree with me. He said a lot of people love it, by the way. So he says he's a spokesman for a large number of people, not just speaking for himself. So that's what's scary about this whole thing.
It's super scary.
Yeah.
It's super scary that he can say that and boast about it.
Well, I agree. And it's just one of those things where, you know, I just cannot imagine that there can't be some Republican stand up and say, no, this is as far as I'm going to go. But I haven't heard anything from Kyrsten Sinema. I don't know where Martha McSally is. We need to hear from both our senators as well as our congressional delegation. Republicans are mute on this whole thing. They're not going to get involved in it. But I think Democrats are going to have their say and say that's enough. But this is extremely destructive to everything we stand for in America. It is. And if we don't define ourselves, somebody else is going to define us. Well, Clarence, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it. You're just a wonderful human being and a great friend. And as long as we're in the fight, I'm going to be optimistic. How's that? don't ever get out of the fight. All right, please.
No, I can't. Not at this point. I'm just trying to pay a little rent on the life I've been able to lead.
Well,
and so that's what I do, and I'll continue to do this here until they march me away from here.
We got
to stand up, and the reason why this is existing, because not only are we not standing, but we are like kneeling, and we got to get up off our knees and go to work.
I absolutely agree with you. I agree with you. Thank you.
Look forward to the next time.
I look forward to talking with you again as well. Clarence Boykin, civil rights activist. Thank you. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum. You know, I'm John C. Scott, and I've been telling you why I recommend Perfection Auto Works for my car repair. There's three reasons. Mike Emery, he's honest. Mike Emery, because he's fair. And Mike Emery, because He is a professional, and they repair every single car that they service with the highest level of professionalism in all of Tucson. And there are hundreds of options that you have when your car is not working, but you only have one Perfection Auto Works, and that's the company you ought to choose to repair your car. Each service technician is ASE certified. Customers' reviews online for your inspection. You know, I'm so proud to recommend Mike Emery and Perfection Auto Works to repair your car as well as mine. At 1046 North Beverly, you can call him at 323-8650. Mike Emery does the best job in this town of repairing automobiles at the fairest price possible. He's honest. He's reliable. He's just one great mechanic with a group of people that he has surrounded himself with that are the best in this town. I'm John C. Scott, and I trust Mike Emery to repair my family cars, and you can trust Mike Emery to repair your family cars as well, honestly and fairly. What a great company. I'm so proud to talk about them. Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. Call Mike Emery at 323-8650. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on this Tuesday, July the 16th, discussing no vacation for Trump's cruelty and hatred. No vacation for Trump's cruelty and hatred. And that's what it is seemingly all about today. It is not merely a matter of management. It's a deeper scandal than this. Trump is trying to make desperate, suffering people the villains of our national story. He compares refugees fleeing repression and as violent to snakes. And he smears them as rapists and invaders. He has warped moral vision and mercy in the form of a national weakness. Kindness and respect are crimes against the state. This has to change. And only you and me can change it. We'll be back with part two of our show. Jeff Rogers will be with us. Dr. Nolan Cabrera, University of Arizona. He knows something about racism, and he teaches about it at the University of Arizona. And then Dr. Stephen Zunis about the crisis in Turkey. That may put us on the brink of another conflict in the Middle East. That's all coming up in part two of the John C. Scott Political Forum on this July the 16th. KVY, the voice, most trusted local news and talk. Thanks for listening.